I take this opportunity, since I know some people who are here this week were not here last week, to once again thank all of you for the gift of the Hirsch Chumashim. Second week in a row, I'm happy to use them and include them in the shiur, and really do appreciate that gift. Thank you very, very much. A scheduling note, shiur tonight, of course. Next week, I'll be away. I'll be in Chicago. And then the week after that, we will have our last shiur of the season. Okay, we're already. We've already done tonight. Will be two more than last year, so we'll end up having done three more than last year by the end.
2 weeks.
Yes. Next week, which will be the 13th, I will be away, and then Emir Tzeshem the week after that, the 20th. I think. Let me just make sure, since we're talking. The 20th.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on for the 20th. Okay. All right, we spent some time last week doing some very important and interesting psukim in regard to Cain's punishment and his very famous statement or question that was the debate. Gadol Avoni Minaso, and basically that famous declarative question/statement of Cain turns out to have been a major machlokas. We already saw in the Medrash, and we saw that as a running theme through last week's shiur. To what extent do we view Cain as a sinner, but a repentant sinner? Or to what extent do we see him as a defiant sinner? And we saw that there were two opinions of how to understand that phrase. And then the continuation of the psukim and the interaction between God and Cain, very much hinging on that question. And continuing with that theme and carrying forward into the next chapter of Cain's life is really the topic of tonight's shiur, and for the most part, the rest of the parak. For the most part, the rest of the parak is about this next stage of human history, which is when Cain has been evicted from the from Gan Eden. So why don't we pick up with the end of Pasuk Tezayin, which is something we actually saw last week, and we'll see that through Pasuk Chaf Beis today. Yemir Tashem will pick up next week with Pasuk, or the week after, the next year, with Pasuk Chaf Gimel, which is a very famous Pasuk, famous because it's so enigmatic, and we will see that'll be the last closing of Parak Dalet and the closing of our series of Shurim for this year. So, going back to Pasuk Tezayin, let's read together. We analyzed the opinion in the Mefarshim and the Medrash about the beginning of the Pasuk, but we'll just read it for the sake of the totality tonight. Yetze Kayin Melifnei Hashem, Kayin left from the presence of Hashem. Again, we saw different opinions what that meant. Was he leaving in the sense of, it's a euphemistic way of saying he was throwing away God's words, he had just been trying to double speak and be gonev das elyon, as the Medrash said, just trying to trick God, but really he was dismissive of him. That's perhaps what's connoted, right? The Ramban says, no, he was a sincere penitent, but he was embarrassed, so he was basically telling God, I'll always be too embarrassed to daven. Some form or another, again, depending on your perspective of Cain, positively or negatively, he takes leave of Hashem. Now, where does he go? Yeshev be'eretz nod kidmat Eden. We take the pasuk literally. He is then settling in the land of Nod. Is Nod the name of a place, or is it description? What does the word mean if we look at it descriptively? It means to wander. So either it means that he went to some place called Nod, which would be a coincidence given his punishment, or perhaps it's meant to be euphemistic. That means that maybe he went to one place, maybe he was everywhere, because he was always wondering. We'll have to see, but that's a little bit unclear. And somehow we're giving a geographical reference, Kidmas Eden, east of Eden. So we'll have to see exactly what that means. It's obviously unclear.
Thank you.
Called what? East of Eden, really? About Cain? Okay. There's no limit to what I don't know. I know plenty. But Yehida Kayin, Pasuk Yizayin. But Yehida Kayin is Ishto. And again, we've seen this. This is now the second time in the Chumash we've seen this. But Yehida, when it comes to a man and a woman, is a reference to intimacy. That Kayin and his wife were intimate. Vatar Vatelir Es Chanoch. And he had a son named Chanoch. Vayehi Bona'ir. And he, now how do you translate that? He built a city. He was building a city. Meaning pre-birth, post-birth. Or I'm looking at the art scroll that I have. He became a city builder. It's about him, a profession. Not 100% clear. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Interesting. But you will see some interesting mepharshim, machlokas, Radak and Ramban. I hope we'll see about how to understand this. That even that seemingly innocuous phrase, which I think is telling in terms of Cain's mindset. And he named the city in honor of the son, Chanoch. I don't know if we have, do we have any other examples of that, of cities named after people in modern era?
Washington.
When I was a kid, there was, in the neighborhood that I lived in, there was a Dina Lane, and my mother told me that there was a builder. And when he was building the street, he named it, was his daughter's. It was his daughter's bas mitzvah, and he gave that to her as a gift.
The Pickwick are named after characters correct. In the Pickwick Papers.
What are
Pickwick? Somerset.
I never. Again, there's no limit to what I don't know.
And in Lakewood, there's all the European.
In Lakewood, there's the European cities.
Where my son lives, you drive down there, and it's what, Kletsk?
I mean, I'm on the intersection of Kletsk and Lodge. I like that.
Right. And in fact, we have, what do you call it? One of those machines.
GPS.
Garmin.
And it tells you go right on Kletsk.
That's great. Well, listen, if there's a Torah lane, we have two of them in Baltimore. There's a Yeshiva lane and Torah lane. Right? Look at that. Okay, Torah Drive. Okay, anyway, so he named the whole city, not just the street, he named the whole city after his son Chanoch. Okay? Continues the Pasuk. But Yivalev Lechanoch as Irad, next generation, that's the third generation, Irad. Irad Yalad as Mechuyael. I think I may have told you this in the past, but now that you'll have some empathy, I had to learn this Parsha when I was 13, right? These are not easy words. Yeah, no. It's a recurring nightmare. I published a piece once about my bar mitzvah. It's a hard memory. Let's just say my parents did not see me going to the rabbinate from that date. Right, that's fourth generation. Fifth generation, excuse me. And then we have the next generation of Lamech. And now we focus. We skip a few generations. It doesn't seem to have been anything eventful there. Now we're at the pivotal generation of Lamech. We're up to Pasuk Gittes, Chamishi. I got a break as a Balkare. Yigachlo Lamech Shtei Nashim. Lamech married two women. Question number one. Why do we need to know that? Shem Achas Ada. Shem Hashenis Tzila. Two women, these were their peculiar names. Vatelet Ada as Yoval. Hu haya avi yosheb ohel umikne. And Yovel was the father of those who are yosheb ohel, dwell in a tent, umikne, with livestock, or graze or raise cattle rancher. Shem achiv Yuval, right? So they had two, they were brothers, Yovel and Yuval. Hu haya avi kol topes kinor v'ugav. And he was the father, which again here presumably means in the first, who handled the harp and the flute. Basically, he invented music. There was no music before him. He invented music. Pasuk Chavbeis, the Tzila gam hi yolda es Tuval Kayin. Right. So until now, we only had from Ada. Now we have the other wife, Tzila, and she gave birth to someone named Tuval Kayin. Right. That's like Rick giving birth to Rick Jr., so to speak. Right, Cain now has this is already a grand, seven generations removed, but Cain is still alive, and now there's a baby finally in the family named Tuval Cain. And what do we know about Tuval Cain? He was also an inventor. Lotesh Kol Choresh Nechoshes Buvarzel. He was a sharpener or a shaper of copper and iron, and he made utensils. First time we have utensils and or weapons. And then we were told there's the birth of a little girl, Vachos Tuval Kayin Na'ama, and there is the birth of a girl named Na'ama. Right, it's the first year of a girl that's mentioned. Now presumably there have been females born, because how else do we have future generations? Which begs the question, if presumably in the previous five generations there were females being born, but they weren't mentioned in the Parsha here, so why is Na'ama mentioned? What is so special about Na'ama? Okay, so these are, I would say, on the face of it, less than thrilling psukim. Certainly compared to some of the narrative we've had leading up to this, I would not call these as thrilling. But I think if we scratch the surface, beneath the surface a little bit, we will find some interesting and relevant material which can stimulate us to give some greater thoughts. So let's turn back to Pasuk Tazayin. If you recall, as we read it a few minutes ago, I pointed out that just immediately there seems to be a little bit of a confusion about where was Kayin sent. Is there a place called Nod? If there isn't, which is unlikely because it would be too coincidental, but it's called Nod. He's the wanderer and he's going to a place called Wandering. If it's not, if it's really just a euphemism for the fact that he was wandering, so if it's not really a specific location, then how could the Pasuk reference it being next to the eastern side of Eden?
Moreover, how can they say he settled there?
Right, exactly. It's an inherent contradiction. Thank you. I was going to point that out. But Yoshev means to settle. Nod means to wander. So that Pasuk is very, very unclear. So let's take a look at Rashi now. Let's take a look at Rashi. Kidmas Eden, east of Eden. Sham Gola Aviv. That's where his father is. Remember, his father had been kicked out of Gan Eden. And now he is wandering near east of Eden, and that's where his parents were. Kishimugorash Megan Eden, when he was kicked, when Adam was kicked out of Gan Eden. Shinemar Vishachain Mikeden Legan Eden. Lishmor, right? That's the pasuk about Adam. As Shviras Derech Mabo Hagan. He was guarding the approach to this, the angelic or primordial garden. Sheish lomod shehaya Adam sham umatzinu ruach mizrachi. Excuse me. And that's how we knew that Adam was there. He wanted to make sure that it was garden and that no one would enter when they weren't supposed to. Okay, I'm not sure what to make of that. An interesting midrashic tradition. Continues Rashi, again quoting from Medrash. Umatsinu, this is interesting. I don't know what to make of it, but I think it's interesting. Umatsinu ruach mizrachis koletes b'chol makom. In church tradition, east takes in everybody, excluding harotzchim. Somehow, murderers end up in the east. Shneamar, for example, we're told later in Sefer Dvarim that Moshe set aside the Arei HaMiklat, which are, of course, are for people who murdered accidentally. It says, Oz Yabdil Moshe, Mizracha Shemesh, on the eastern side, i.e., where the side of the rising sun. If you take a step for a moment, take a look at your sheet. Rashi is paraphrasing a medrash. Let's just see the original medrash. Rav Omar, Chol Makom Ruach Mizrachas Koletes. In all examples, The eastern side, relative to whatever we're talking about, somehow takes in or absorbs these problematic situations and gives in more detail than Rashi made it to abbreviated. Adam Arishon, as the pasuk said, we saw. Kayin, here we see again the Yetzei Kayin with Hashem, etc. And finally, Arot Seach and Tvarim Oz Yavdil Moshe.
Well, first of all, the reason why they made the Ari Miklat there was because two and a half tribes had a lot more roads than that.
Right.
And the other had
three also, right.
I mean, you had to put them somewhere.
I'm not sure what to make of it, but Rashi and the Medrash originally seem to make this, big deal out of the fact that somehow there's a reference to the east.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think that when my Professor Horowitz was here that time, I remember that paper I written for him a long time ago, where there is somehow a connection between the word kedem and rishus. I think in that case it has something to do with sacred or something. So that was
fine. Yeah. I'm not sure what to make of it. There has to be more here, but I'm not sure. I just thought it was an interesting possibility. But leave that aside. There is a second interesting opinion, also coming from a different medrash, which if we go back, if we keep our finger on Rashi, go back to Rashi, Rashi then quotes a second tradition, a davar acher, another tradition, which also comes from a medrash, which we'll see in a moment inside. Go back to Rashi. Rashi says, what's the alternative explanation? Be'eretz Nod. What does it mean when the Torah says Be'eretz Nod? Kol makom shaholeich, anywhere he went, ha'isa ha'aretz mizdaza'as tachtov. The earth would quake or tremble beneath him. Habrios Omrim, and people would say, Suru Me'alav, stay away from him. Zehu Shaharag Es Achiv. This is the one who killed his brother. Where does Rashi get that from? From a different medrash, the medrash Tanchuma, which is the second source on your sheet. Let's look at it inside. We'll get a greater appreciation for it. And we see the original medrash. Starts off a little bit with the dialogue which we had seen last week between between Cain and Hashem. Right? Cain says to God, Kol ha'olam kulo ata sovel v'avoni eincha yachol lisbol. God, you have forbearance on all sorts of other averas. How come you're being so strict with me? God responds, Hol va'asisa tshuva. So by acknowledging that he did an avera, again, this is part of that tradition. The Ramban embraced that tradition, that Cain had done tshuva. Therefore, say, gola min ha'mokam hazeh. You should be put in golas, you should be banished. Which again, we know, presages the fact that, as we just saw, golas is sometimes a punishment for murderers, at least in certain circumstances. Quoting our pasuk. And then, elaborating on it, says the Medrash in continuation, where I have it underlined at the end of the second line, Kishiyese, when he went, kol makom sh'ayaholeh, wherever he traveled, ha'isa ha'aret mizdaza'as. Every the earth would tremble beneath him, itachav. Ha'yuchayos u'behemos mizdaza'os. And even the animals would tremble with fear. Omrus mahuza, and they would be, you know, disrupted. Who is this? Why is the earth trembling beneath us? What is going on? Omeris, and they would tell each other, Zu lezu, Kayan haragis hevel achiv. This is Kayan who killed Hevel, his brother. Gozer HaKadosh Baruch Hu alav, na v'nod tihiye. He should be...
Fascinating thing to attribute this kind of to animals.
That's right.
They would,
again, it was so... In this world, the rhythm, you know, between nature and humans is very much... You know, a consistent one. It's not bifurcated at all. And take a look, just we'll see a little bit more, let's take a look at now the Radak. So how does the Radak? The Radak's going to help us a little bit more. Radak says that Nud here really modifies not the land, but modifies him. Nud, mi makom la makom. He wandered from place to place. But then he did finally settle. Ach Yashav Lov in Mizrach Eden, right? After all, the Pasuk said that he settled somewhere, right? That was what was confusing for Doc's trying to figure it all out. He wandered and wandered until he settled in the eastern shore, the eastern bank of Eden. Rachok min amokom chaybo avivimo. Not in the same place, but far away from where his parents were. And even after he finally settled, again, imagine, we spoke about this last week, that perhaps part of the reason why Cain was not killed right away, why he was kept alive, was not out of rachmonis to him, but sometimes, you know, there are things worse than death. There are things worse than death, especially because it can be constructive, it can be a good lesson for other people. So here he's traveling, he's a wanderer, he's, you know, it's a brachin, he finally thinks he has a place to settle, says the Radak, v'gam sham lo nachlo, and even once he thinks he's got roots, it doesn't work. Kikvar nigzara love, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu has commanded and deemed Shahaya Nav Nad Kol Yamav. He's going to be a wanderer his whole life. Ela Shirov Yeshivaso Haya Ba'oso Makom Shaya Kidmas Eden Yishtovan of Yashbusham Tamid Vuhunad. So the Radak says something very fascinating, which only makes sense if you assume that there's some gzera from Hashem. You know, it wasn't just he was wandering because people wanted to kill him and he couldn't find a good place. He finally found a place. He settles there. And in fact, his wife and children, right, he ends up, they settle there. But somehow, and I don't know, it's open interpretation, was it that the people were giving him nuts, were making him nuts? Or was he just filled with some psychological existential angst? He could just never settle. And he, even if he would be there for a little while, he'd be there with his wife, right? He'd have dinner for a few months and then he'd have to travel again. And then he finally come back, you know, he's like the guy on the road, you know, he's like a...
traveling salesman.
Right. Forever.
Forever.
Right. It's a hard life. It's a hard life. And again, it's almost like, you know, Lahabdul, you know, so you can imagine sometimes when people have either asthma or these terrible coughs, you know, like they're going and they can't catch their breath. Then they finally have a break. They can catch their breath. And like when they just think things are okay, it comes back. And they go on and on for a while and it's terrible. Then they finally catch their breath. And then it starts again. It's torturous. It's torturous. And again, Radak doesn't give us a down-to-earth logical reason why he couldn't settle. He just says, Kaf Gazer, this is Gzeres Hashem. So how it played out, he leaves to our imagination. Kayan just couldn't, he had angst, he couldn't, you know, Ishbilkis, ants in the pants, or people were, you know, being rode with him, don't stay here, we don't want you here, we don't want your kind in our neighborhood, and you have to run away for a few years and then come back. Radak doesn't tell us. But he does, you see again, if you just saw this Radak in a vacuum, it would be a little bit peculiar, but when we've seen the Pasuk, I hope you appreciate the Radak is struggling, because again, the Pasuk seems to be not only confusing, but perhaps even contradictory. The Pasuk talks about settling, and also talks about wandering. It is the name of a place, or is it, you know, or is it a euphemism for one? It's not clear. So the Radak senses this tension, and he does try to resolve it.
Makes sense as to why he would call the city Hanoch after his son, as almost like building a permanent location.
Right, right. I want a better life for you. A better life for you. I'm the wanderer, but you should have a home. You should have a home. Good. Exactly. Very nice. Very, very nice. Take a look at the Ramban. You are in Mechavin, Gina, I believe, to something here. The Ramban here on the first source on your sheet, also, again, in this vein, but again, remember, the picture I just painted you from the Radak and even from Rashi is a very tortured one. Right now, if you think back about last week's shir, well, if he did tshuva, why are we so cruel to him? The answer may be because, you know, he's still got to get punished even if he did tshuva. But the Ramban, I was always, the whole time I'm thinking, what's the Ramban going to do with this pasuk? Right, the Ramban is the one who's the chief defender of Kain. Not his actions, but he believes that he really did tshuva. So what does the Ramban say? The Ramban continues in that context and said, yes, this was very bad, but it could have been worse. Shalom halach b'chal ha'olam. There was a certain specified geographical area, not a small one perhaps, but it wasn't the whole world, and in that specified area, he was nav-nad, he wandered back and forth. But he didn't have to travel the whole length and breadth of the world. Aval ba'osa ha'aretz yashav, nodeid tamed. In some area that, generally speaking, that he'd settled, in that area, he wandered. Lo yanuach b'makom mimena klal. But he didn't ever have to go further than that. He was there. V'dikras eretz nod al shmol olam. So yes, it is a specific place. Aye, come on. Is there really a place called Nod? What a coincidence. The answer is, it's not a coincidence. It wasn't called Nod then. But in retrospect, because this was his place and everyone knew that he was wandering from pillar to post in this area, so the area became known as Nod deliberately because of his punishment. So on the one hand, yes, there was a punishment. On the other hand, it serves a specific place. It's a brilliant taitch of the pasuk, I think. And again, the Ramban himself is sensitive. Again, you have to understand the Ramban's context. He doesn't use the word tshuva here, but we understand the Ramban's coming from a perspective that's more favorable, disposed to Kayin. So why are we being so cruel to him, says the Ramban? It could have been a lot worse. This is part of the tshuva. This is the rachmanis that Hashem had from him. So again, to use our mushal of the traveling salesman, so maybe he had to go up and down the northern or the eastern seaboard. He didn't have to go to China. He didn't have to go to Australia. Right? So it's a big area. We don't know exactly how big, and it was not easy life, but it could have been worse. It could have been worse. And again, I think the Ramban certainly sees that in light of, I would think the Ramban is explaining that in light of his general approach, which we saw more last week, of Kayan doing tshuva. Okay, so here we have, just at the end of Pasuk Tezayin, a whole, you know, machlokes, which reflects different perspectives. First of all, had a taitch, a difficult pasuk, but I think second of all, it gives us a flavor, again, not that there's radical differences between the pshatim, but even subtle differences as to what Kayan's life was like and why it was, given their perspective of his spiritual state. The next thing, of course, we saw in the pasuk was the birth of Hanoch, and the fact that Kayan was bone-ear and then naming a city. So the Ramban, basically, and we'll use the Ramban's questions implicitly, to set the table to see not only the Ramban, but the Machlokes with the Radak. But basically, I would say there are three questions one could ask on this pasuk. What's the first question? Well, one is the present tense, exactly. In other words, why does it say he was building, which means not only, you know, did he not stop? I mean, was he doing it before? Was this a reaction to having a child? You know, you have a child, now you have to go buy a crib. Maybe now you got to build a city. Or was he doing that already? Which one was it? That's number one, it's unclear. But I have two more questions, one of which in particular is very fundamental. already bevorned it, but try to forget what you said and now ask your question again and think of it as a question. Why is he building a city?
Well, to show it. That's the point, to show the settling down.
No, but whoa, 1 second. Who's settling?
I mean, for his son. I mean,
even though he will wander his family. And
whoa, so that's the question. So it depends. Was he building before the baby was, before he had a child? That's certainly a plausible reading of the apostle. But if that's the case, why? Who's he building for? He can't settle anywhere.
Clearly, from the chronology
I know that, but the pasuk does not say, again, just to use the chronology or the grammar, the dictum of the pasuk, it does not say he had a son and then he built a city.
Wow.
He was building.
But the placement,
he may have begun building when his wife became
The placement of the
pasuk, right? I understand. Why?
The placement is right after the birth.
No. Yes, I understand. The structure of the pasuk is right. Yes, which is why it's confusing. Yes. But again, if you translate it literally, he was building a city. That's how you would translate it.
His whole intention of marrying, of having a family, was for
the. I understand that, but there are people who have married who have families, and they wander. They go from place to place in the desert, right? They live in Israel to this day. They don't build cities, right? You know, if he's the wanderer. Who or why is he building a city? I'm not saying there's not an answer to that. But again, in a vacuum, that's a difficult thing to understand. What's he doing building a city?
He built it for basically to have his son there, family.
Right, so that presupposes, which I'm just saying it's a chiddush, that his family didn't have to wander. Now again, we already saw that hinted at by the Mefarshim above. But in reading the pasuk itself, that's not obvious. And a final thing, which is just, you know, I say in a sense a curious, not a profound question, but maybe just an interesting one, is why does he name the city after his son? There are countless examples in Tanakh of people naming locations either because they found them, quote unquote, a la Columbus, or because they built them, like Cain here. Are there other examples, not that I can come up with, where they named it after their own son? I mean, there's so many things he could have named it. Why name it after his son? I mean, again, the answer could just be because, you know, why not? Because he could. I mean, is there anything more here?
What's the root word of chanoch? Isn't it sort of resting? Or
yes, it's different. Yes, it's different. Right? Could. It could be. Yeah, it could mean that. So let's see the machlokes between the Radak and the Ramban. Now, it's really the Radak who's going to try to address all three of these issues, but on the most basic question of when was he building and why was he building, so that already the Radak alludes to. Take a look at the Radak. The Radak says, again on your sheet, the eighth shenolad lo ben, hu hayabona ir l'shivto, v'shevis banav, v'hadoros haboim acharov. Again, the Radak above had said he got to stay home for a few weeks, and then he got to leave. Right? I use my mushal of the asthmatic, you know, who can catch his breath, and then he starts gasping again. Radak above, just look at your sheet, a few sources above. The Radak had said he could stay in a place, but then he'd have to leave, then he'd come back, then he'd leave. So apparently he was staying in a place at least for some time. So when he's staying, he might as well have a place to sleep. Plus, he knew he was going to have children, and he knew he'd want them, and apparently it was obvious that they were not going to be penalized, they were not going to be punished, they weren't going to have to wander. So he was building already, you know, it was before the birth. Before the birth, perhaps even before the pregnancy, because after all, he himself, every now and then, got to have a respite. He was building a place, and eventually, of course, for the expected children, grandchildren, Ura Enoch. Ubekidma Sa'eden Hayazeh, we now know the location of where it was. La'icha Karashem Eir, B'Shem Beno, Mishano Lo'aben, B'Eis Shahayabona Eir. He was already building it. It's like my mother's friend. The builder was already building the city, building the road, when the milestone occurred. It hadn't, you know, the naming rights hadn't been taken yet. Building the city, I have a child. Nope. The same way any one of us might think of, you know, dedicating the moment. I might as well. But there's nothing more profound about that choice of name. And the assumption that he makes is that he was already building before there was a pregnancy, and certainly before there was a baby, because he did get a respite every now and then. He was able to sleep in the same bed two nights in a row, and therefore he was building up. That is the Radak's approach. Everyone with me? You'll appreciate.
A minor point, Rabbi. I teach you to use the word here. What are we talking about?
Oh, very good. Hold off until we see Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch makes a big deal about that.
Okay.
Rav Hirsch's entire approach here, which I think is a spin-off of the Ramban, even though he doesn't quote him, but his whole approach is predicated on his analysis of the word year. So you'll like that. But hold on one second. Let's take a look now at the Ramban. Okay, everyone with me? Everyone have the sheet. Bottom of the front page. And again, keep in mind, the Ramban is bavarning. He is implicitly reacting to three things bothering him in the text. Number one, right, fundamentally, why is he building it all if he's a wanderer? Why is he, why does it say that he was building now in the present tense? And number three, why does he name the city after his son? The Tam starts off the Ramban. Why is it in the present tense, Vayhi Bona Ir? Ki Mitchila, underlined. A completely different approach as the Ramban. He thought he would never have children. He thought that the punishment of being a wanderer was a way of saying you will live not only a nomadic but a lonely life. You will never settle. You will never have roots. You will never have a future generation. You will never have children. As a punishment, right? Sometimes people don't have children just because they can't. But here, says the Ramban, it was a punishment. It was a punishment. He thought, tying in his head, thought it would, that was going to be. So he wasn't building anything. Who needs to build anything when you're just wandering around? Acharei shenolda lo Zerah. And after Yitaka had a son, oh my gosh, Hachel livnos ir, Lios beno Yosheb, all of a sudden, bing, paradigm shift. All of a sudden, he realizes, you know, I may have this tortured existence, but apparently I will have a future, I'll have a generation, and that comes after me, I'll have a child, and that child apparently is not doomed in the way that I am. And therefore, whatever, you know, like the ultimate parent, as much as I have to suffer, but I want it to be better for the next generation, I want it to be better for my son, I'm going to build a city. Question number one, why was he building if he had to wander, says the Ramban, and Chenami. If it would have been just for him, he never would have built. The wanderer doesn't need a city. However, he only built after he had a child and he realized that child would not have to be a wanderer. Continues. He was cursed. And he never had atzlacha. As Hashem said, now again, Hashem said you'll never have atzlacha as a farmer. But the Ramban here sees it as something more general. You'll never have atzlacha in anything you do. Karo Chanoch. Called the boy's name Chanoch. What does he mean by that? Lahagid ki lo bana la'atzmo. He called the city after his son's name. Not like the Radak said. Not like my mother's friend. Who just stam, why not? If you have the power, why not? Name a city after your daughter. You name a son, a city after your son. Why not? Says the Ramban, no, it was much more thought out and almost theologically profound. He was doing it, you know, like we sometimes say, Mishana Mokko, Mishana Mazel, or Chalila, you have somebody who's sick, so we change their name. So he says, listen, if I'll name it after me, or it'll just be known as Kayan City. That's a nice ring, Kayan City. Right? Salt Lake City, you know. Anyway, it'll never have a slacha, right? The plumbing won't go well, and the streets will crack. It won't go, it won't be Masliach, that city, right? We're not going to make the desert bloom if the name is Kayan. Therefore, he went out of his way to name it after his son, and we know had a different model would have a slacha. Answer to question number two. And finally, he continues with Neshalo Amar Vayiven Ir, which is what it should have said. Right? Vayiven Ir is what it could have said, but rather, what is it coming to teach us? Ki Haya Kol Yamav Bona Ha'ir. Why? It took him a long time. It wasn't like it was a set plan. It wasn't like he hired BCBM, build me a shul. Right? They're on time. Right? Boom, boom, boom. Right? Our builders are good. They didn't have that. This was a Kayan was the builder. He was a general contractor. What do we say? He didn't have atzlacha. He was cursed. He was not a matzliach kind of guy. Yivne ma'at v'torach v'omel. Even if he built something small, took him great effort. V'yanua v'yanud min makam ahu. Right? He would be building. Then all of a sudden, that angst, the psychological angst, he'd have to run for a few weeks. V'yasur, he'd come back. V'yivne ma'at, he'd build a little bit more. Eventually it was built and he wanted to name it after his son so it should in the future have more hatzlacha. But the actual building process it was his mazel, and his mazel wasn't good, because he had this psychological angst, I guess. He was cursed, he was tortured, and therefore he was never, ever successful. So in terms of the actual city, the text, and the tense of the pasuk, again, a masterful Ramban. He tries to answer not only all the questions, but has a completely different approach. Again, we see a major machlokes. You know, the cycle, again, it's a cycle of insight into Cain. Right? Here you are, Cain. You're the first murderer. You perpetrated a holocaust, right? A quarter of the world's population you killed. God sends you away. You know, so where's your head at? So last week you already saw Major Machlokas. Is he genuinely a penitent, or is he still rebellious? That was a major question. Fascinating. And now we have a second one, which is, you know, kind of, is he doom and gloom, or does he see some hope in his own future? Major machlokas, Radak and Ramban. According to Radak, he was always, so to speak, optimistic in the sense of he was always building for himself, knew he'd have children, knew they'd be okay. That's why he was building. Wonderful, shine. Ramban, again, it's interesting. The Ramban, who thinks he's a Baal Tshuva, perhaps because he was a Baal Tshuva, again, this is my own chiddush, if you will, my own ha'ara, but perhaps it's the Ramban specifically, the Ramban who thinks he was a Baal Tshuva. So Baal Tshuva, right? Understandably, sometimes even unhealthy, has guilt. Right, because he's very much in touch with what he did wrong. He could have been a Baal Tshuva if he wasn't. He wasn't obtuse, as the way some other Mefarshim see him, even to the end. He was very in touch with his guilt. Perhaps he therefore even felt guilty. But because he was so in touch with his guilt, I would suggest, it's the Ramban, no coincidence, who sees him as being, kind of seeing or expecting the worst. The fact is, it turns out it's better than he thought. Hashem had more achmanus on him. He thought he did something so terrible, he would never be able to have children, he'd always be wandering, he'd have no future. Happens to be, Hashem had that Rachmanis on him and never maybe had that intended. Again, I don't think it's a coincidence, I don't think it's ironic, I think it's on the contrary, I think it's consistent. There's the Ramban who sees that as particularly ominous sensibility, doom and gloom that Cain had, as well as the Radak, who sees Cain again as being willing to imagine a brighter future. And again, that's not necessarily flattering to Cain. It could be that the reason he's a Cain, from the Radak's perspective, had a brighter future, brighter, more optimistic attitude, is because he never really got it. He was obtuse. Right? We saw Rehersh last week stress the fact that even when Cain is talking to God, it's all about himself. It's never about Hevel. Right? Rehersh made that very trenchant insight. Even his comments, where he's quote unquote pleading, are all about me, not about what I do to my brother. So if you have that, if you take that approach to Cain, you're not going to have this doom and gloom foreboding, right? Because it's all about, so perhaps, again, I'm not saying it has to be, but that's my suggestion. Just keeping on that vein, look at the continuation and the completion of the Ramban. He just adds, by the way, especially when we'll see the next pasuk, the next pasuk is just, the list of five generations, what do we need to know all this for, right? This is the boring parts of Chumash. What do we need to know all this for? So says the Ramban, why do we know the Toldos Kain Umasov? To show you that Hashem had Rachmanis on him, that Kain lived another multiple generations. And not only that, he had children and grandchildren. His kirki, Poket Avon Avos, Albanim, the Nichris Zara. On the one hand, it shows the Rachmanis that we let him live seven generations and have children. On the other hand, the story which we're about to get to Mirat Hashem next week, we'll see that at the end of the day, not only does he get his just desserts, but his whole family ends up getting destroyed. Perhaps, with one exception, we'll see that in a moment. Maybe his daughter gets left alive. We'll see that in a second. But then you see, even according to Ramban, who has the most favorable disposition towards Cain, at the end of the day, he does get punished. He was a murderer. No question about that. Harry before stressed the question of the ear. Right? What are we talking about? A house? Right? You imagine Cain built a house. But the Torah says, he built a city. So take a look at Rav Hirsch, bottom of the page. It does not say, even ear, he built a city. But rather, what was the Torah's pasuk? Right? He bone ear. He was a builder of a city. Not that he built the city, but he was a builder of a city. What is that significance, says Rav Hirsch? With him a new enterprise started. The city. He created the concept of urban life, of a city, cut off from God and his fellow man. What remained unto him? He himself was what remained unto him. The stock of mental powers and ability, which was part of his personality, And from that, quite naturally, the city builder emerged. Says Rav Hirsch, he was all alone, he had no friends, he couldn't farm anymore, he didn't have, wasn't close with Hashem. But he was industrious, he didn't give up, and he made the most of it. And he makes the point here, what's the difference between an urban and a rural as opposed to urban setting? The city, as contrasted to land, is a complex of human beings that make their living purely out of human powers. Right, as opposed to the farm, which the farmer does what he can, but then he has to trust in Hashem that it'll grow. Right? But if you're selling widgets, or for that matter, building furniture, that's all man. There's no, you know, we may believe in God's blessing, the efforts, but there's nothing where you leave it and then it goes on its own, the way a farmer does. So what is the, quote, fields? He speaks poetically, Rav Hirsch does. The fields, quote unquote, which a city dweller has to cultivate, or his powers, right? That's what he has to cultivate, not the land, but his mind and his abilities. On the land, the fields are cultivated. In the city, it is the man. In the city, all of the slumbering capabilities of man are awakened, and men become wide awake. It is accordingly extremely characteristic that city life first began with Cain, the one who was cut off from the land and thrown back on himself. His first son made it incumbent on him to think of providing for the future, and for him there was no other way but to make a beginning of founding city life. So he doesn't quote the Ramban, but he's clearly working with the assumption of the Ramban that this city was a reaction to having a child. And he's elaborating on the notion, again, somewhat philosophically, of what the notion of city life is, and how it's no coincidence that that's what Cain did, because that's pretty much all he was left with. The more natural suburban life, which again, that's how he takes ear as to be contrasting with farms, basically. And again, not a coincidence. He who had been the farmer was stripped of that, so he had to adapt to city life.
So actually, Rav Hirsch focuses then on he obeyed that Dhamma, and he started out. He was an obeyed Dhamma, and then he was like,
contrasting,
so
exactly.
A major change.
Exactly. Exactly, Harry. Okay. Now, if you take a look at the next... we're going to skip, there's nothing really to see, I don't think, for us, at least on Pasuk Yud Ches. That's the listing of the four next generations. But then on Pasuk Yud Ches, we had the reference to the two wives, Ada and Tzila. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi just tells us something interesting, I guess you could call it. Rashi says, why two wives? Before that, this is really what I want to see. The first Rashi in Pasuk Yud Ches. Yigach lo lemech. Lo ahayu lo lefarish koza. What does the Torah need to tell us all this? Elo lamdeinu misof inyin, to show us how the story ends. Shekiyem HaKadosh Baruch Hu haftachaso. Hashem fulfilled his promise. Amar shiv asayim yukam kain. Right? We saw that last time, right? It was a very enigmatic phrase. It was a major machlokas. So the Ramban had said it means that anyone who touches Cain will be repaid for seven generations, punished. But most Mepharshim said like this Rashi, it means that Cain has a reprieve for seven generations, he's not going to get killed, but eventually he'll get his just desserts. And that's what Rashi says. Amad Lemach, and what was more cruel than that? La'achar sholidvanim, once Lemach had his own children, v'asa dor ashvi, which then became the seventh generation, harag es Cain, he killed Cain. And that's based on a pasuk that we'll see Emirat Hashem next week. Again, and what's the poetic justice here? He who killed his brother ends up being killed by a great-grandson. Right? What goes around comes around. Right? Very, very tragic. The next Rashi just points out that it's not a coincidence that he had two wives, but that historically in this ancient period, the minhag was to have two wives. One was to have an actual human relationship with, to have children, to build a family with, and the other was purely an object of desire. In fact, Rashi tells you in detail how they used to give them some kind of they tried to sterilize those women, so they would always never be able to conceive and always be pretty. But as it turns, as we saw in the next pasuk, it didn't work because she also had a child. Right? She had two al-kaim. But again, that's the background of the two wives that Rashi tells us about. And then I want to mention that if we see just a few more Rashis, which also are basically based on Midrashim, when it comes to these sons, right? So each of the three sons that are mentioned, we have 10 minutes left, let's just focus on the children now for the remainder of the shiur. Three sons, each one of them were told were the Avi, they were somehow the inventor of a certain new trade or way of life. And then we have the somewhat surprising reference to the daughter, we don't know what to make of her. So let's take one at a time. But going to Pasach Chaf, the first one was Yaval, and he, we are told, is the Yoshev Ohel Umikne. Let's take a look at Rashi, Pasach Chaf. Hu Haya Rishon, he was the first, L'roe Behemoth B'midbaros, who would graze animals in the desert. The Yoshev Aholim, he himself would stay, you know, would be, that's how he lived in the tents. Chodesh Kan, right, a month here, they'd eat up all the grass, and they'd have to move somewhere else for another month. Right, when they would be in one place, then they would go to the next place. So this is a nice, you know, what happened, why? His great-great-grandfather, Kayan, was Hevel was the cattle rancher. But Hevel was killed, apparently that was lost for generations, until now this Yaval came back and he, you know, reintroduces grazing and raising livestock. Innocuous, it's nice, right? We see the development of the economic part of the world. However, Rashi then adds a Midrashic tradition. Umidrash Agada Bo Nebatim Le'avodah Zarah. Right? It wasn't just that he had Ohalim for tents for his livestock, but that he did it for Avodah Zarah. In other words, we already see the beginning of the corruption of this line. Right? We are introduced now for the first time to Avodah Zarah and the name of Yoshev Ohel, Ohel being double entendre, also being used for Avodah Zarah. The next pasuk spoke about not Yaval, right? It's a tongue twister. Yaval and Yuval. This is Yuval now, the brother, and who was he? The musician. Avi called Topes Kinor V'Ugav, right? He was the first people to handle a harp and a flute. You're not forced to, but there's a tradition that it was. In fact, I didn't put, excuse me, I forgot, I just realized I forgot, I should have put another Radak on this page. The Radak about this brother, about Yuval, the Radak says similarly, not only did the brother use the tents for Avodah Zarah, but Yuval used the flutes and the harps for Avodah Zarah as well. Mm-hmm.
So
Rashi also. Oh, good, thank you. I stopped too soon. Thank you. Where are you? Same pasuk?
The last part of the Rashi.
Oh, thank you. Yes, okay. It's also in the Radak. Okay, now I know why. Now I remember why I didn't put the Radak on the page, because it was also in Rashi.
It's interesting that Hafsama Kabbalah brings down the Grom, says that they were Perushim B'Mibaros and Mispodin Avodas Hashem Mispar.
Completely different.
Completely different.
You know what?
Correct. Right. It's a contrast. Right. Right. Very good. Okay. Good. Thank you. So it's in the Ksav HaKabbalah, Bernie?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me make myself a note. Okay. Good. Interesting. Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Now we have third son. We have Tubal Kain. Like next pasuk, right? So the other wife, Tzila, who was not supposed to be able to conceive, right? She's supposed to be the one who's just there for other things, but somehow the best laid plans, she conceives and she has a son named Tubal Kain. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Right? Tovel or tavlin is seasonings or spices. So Tuval umnaso shel Kayin, he seasoned or he improved on the profession of his father, his great-great-grandfather Kayin. Tuval lashon tavlin. And which profession would that be? Hitkin Nosso Shalkayan Asas Kli Zayin Le Rotschim. His grandfather was a murderer, had the murder with his bare hands, or maybe with a rock or something, because he didn't have any weapons. Kumtais Tuval Kayan. Kayanical. Right? He takes the Marosha of the Meshpacha. And he's going to be Lahagdil Uladira, just it's not Torah, but it is murder. This comment of Rashi is based on the Medrash. Take a look at the last source on your sheet. The last source on your sheet is the Bereishis Rabbah. Rabbi Yoshua, the Sakinin B'Shem Rabbi Levi Omer, the Toval Aveiroso Shalkain. Right, Rashi says the Umnoso, the profession. Right, the Medrash doesn't miss any words. The Aveira of the great grandfather. Kain Harag Vahev Amala Harog. Kain had to kill basically with his bare hands. How is that Lotesh called Choresh Nechoshesu Barzel? This one learned how to beat right the copper and the metals. He knew how to make weapons, and he was able to unfortunately improve upon his grandfather's methods. He introduced weapons. Right? And again, it's interesting. Here you have, I would say, going out of the way to make a negative judgment. This is what I'm trying to stress. Your point is it actually helps make my point, which is notwithstanding that apparently there's the Gra or there's other tradition, which is fine, but it seems like a more mainstream position, Rashi, Midrashim, others, Adarava, going out of their way, maybe there is no Samach, but they're going out of their way to find negative things about Lemeth's children. This one is Avodah Zarah, this one's Avodah Zarah, this one's a murderer. Let me ask you a question. Can't weapons be used for a good thing? Well, how would weapons be used for a good thing? To defend, right? To defend against bad people.
And also, it sounds like that they might have been making tools.
Right. But even if you look at it just as weapons, right? It's one thing if the terrorists have a bomb, it's another thing if the Israelis have a bomb, right? I'm not speaking in the UN, but none of us think it's a problem that Israel has a nuclear weapon, but we wouldn't want Iranians to have one, right? It all depends on what you're going to use it for. So, the bottom line is, you could have looked at Tuval Kain and said, oh, now there's a new weapon. It used to be that only the bad guys had weapons, and now even the good guys can defend themselves. The answer is no. Rashi, the Medrash are not. Again, it's like an Ayin Ra, right? The usual, the classic traditional definition, not colloquially, the way we think of an Ayin Hara, is not the way we usually use the word. The way Chazal used the word Ayin Hara, like in Prophet Yavis, means you can't forgive anybody. Right? You look at anything and you could be optimistic, you could be positive, but you're not. That's the way Chazal used the word. But they're basically, I would say, I am not guilty of the wrong sense of the word, but in a sense, they are, quote-unquote, guilty of that. They're looking at everything with the, oh, hell, could be good, it'll be good, we're going to say it's bad. Music could be good or bad, we'll say it's bad. Weapons could be good or bad, we'll say it's bad. They're clearly, it's like consistent, going out of their way to see something negative in all of Lamech's children. And no one will escape that, at least not in terms of perhaps a perspective. And with this, we'll close with the reference to Na'amah. So again, the question is very peculiar. Why is Na'amah being mentioned? It's obvious that she's not the first girl born in seven generations. Right? That's just biological reality. And yet, she is the first one to be mentioned. Huh? Ah, so here we have a major machlokas. Again, do we look for anything positive in Kayin? Or do we want to throw dirt on him even to the end? So what does Rashi say? Na'amah, Ishto Shel Noach. She is the wife of Noach. That's based on the Bereishis Rabbah, the same Bereishis Rabbah that we saw. Let's see it again. What's the Medrash that we saw? I stopped in the middle. Look at the second line, last source on your sheet, the second line. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Na'amah Ishto Shel Noach Haisa. She was the wife of Noach. Lama Hayakorin Oso Na'amah Shehayu Ma'aseha Ne'im. She was a tzadekes. She was the first real tzadekes. I mean, maybe Chava was too, but we don't have people stressing that. She's the tzadekes. The first art scroll biography of a woman was written about Na'amah. And that's why she merited to be Noach's wife. Now, what do we know about Noach's wife? We know she survived the flood. Right? She was righteous, right? She's part of the inner family, the nuclear family that survives the flood because they were righteous. She's Ma'aseh Ne'imim. That's the positive approach to her. Take a look at the Ramban. Go back up now. The Ramban.
What's the last line?
We're going to get back to it. We'll get back to it. Ramban elaborates on this Medrash. Second line where it's underlined of the Ramban. Niskav Nulomar, what's the Medrash driving at? Shahayallah Shame Bedoros Haheim. she had a reputation. But not when you, right, when we say a woman has a reputation, there's a negative connotation to that phrase. Here, says the Ramban, it was meant positively. She had a reputation in those generations. Ki haita tzadekes, holida tzadikim. She was a tzadekes. She gave birth to tzadikim. Chein yaski rena hakosav. And that's why, she's mentioned in the pasuk, because she deserves to be mentioned. And added, and again, once again, not a coincidence, it is the Ramban, Imkain Nishar Lakayin Zecher Ma'at Ba'olam. Even though Kain himself did have to face his just desserts, but Kain does, it's not his whole family line eradicated, at least through his daughter, or his great-great-granddaughter, I should say, a positive, right, line of the family lives on. Again, there's a little, we can find a glimpse of light at the end of that tunnel for Kain, and again, not a coincidence, even though it's consistent with the Medrash, but it's the Ramban in particular who teases that out. However, the Ramban himself notes that there are other Midrashim. Other Midrashim. So we could either see it in the Medrash itself or in Ramban, but we're in the Ramban. Let's just continue. Ha'isha ha'yofa hi ma'od. Right, more in line with the usual way in modern lingo we say the girl has a reputation. Right, she was very, very pretty. That's what they talked about her. She didn't use that just to be a tzadekes. Rather, shemimenu ta'u b'nei ha'elohim. Right, we'll see this, I guess, next year, Mitzvah Hashem, and Perek Vav, whatever these b'nei Elohim were, these giants, or these whoever they were. Right, but they were seduced, says the Medrash, by this, none other than this Na'amah. They were led astray by this woman. And if that's not bad enough, and that, by the way, is also in the Precious Rabbah. He was borrowing it from what we saw beneath us. He then quotes a Zohar or a Medrash Hanelam, some obscure mystical source. Ki ha'isa eshes Shamdon. She's the wife of Shamdon. Eim Ashmadai, mother of Ashmadai, umimena, noldu hashedim. The tradition that there's demonic spirits and forces in the universe. Who's the mother of all demons? Na'amah. She's the mother of all demons. Ki kein yimsa shema b'kisvei shimushi hashedim. I don't know what that means. If it's the Ramban or the Medrash Hanelam that he's quoting. If you look in the writings, the books, right, you know, like all the secret societies, they have lists of who's part of the, you know, the Skull and Bone Society, you know, and the fancy, and the universities, right, the fancy societies. So in the Hashedim books, they list Na'amah in a very prominent way. Right, the Torah is not going to get into all that stuff. They just hinted at. So, oh, there's a daughter named Na'amah. So you have very, very different midrashim. Some who see her being mentioned Dafka Latov, Zecha Latov, and some who see her being mentioned Dafka Zecha Latov. Either way, it's got to be telling us something, or else it wouldn't have mentioned her. And we have very divergent opinions, which again, on the one hand, mirror what we saw last week and this week, which are really two different opinions of Kain. Again, no one's going to make him into the Gadol Hador. Right? He was a murderer, a significant one. On the other hand, did he have Rachmanis on him? Did he do some tshuva? Did Hashem have Rachmanis on him? Or was he really a good-for-nothing nobody who Hashem only kept alive because it was more torturous to keep him alive and it was educational for the rest of the people? Those are two different approaches which we saw about Kain himself, and perhaps coming full circle with the two different approaches of his great-great-granddaughter, Na'amah. Either way, we're left with this great-grandson, Lamech, and the Mitzvah will pick up with next week the conclusion, or next time, in 2 weeks, the conclusion of Parag Dalid, where we see the how the people of the earth go bad, the real blackening of the generations, which will then eventually take us, of course, to the Dor HaFlaga, and then eventually to the Dor HaMabul. Human history is in a downward spiral as we read. And we are waiting. It'll take us at least another year of learning until we can get something positive again, unfortunately. Okay?